We, as Americans, have the capacity now, as we've had in the past, to do whatever needs to be done to preserve this last and greatest bastion of freedom. Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Welcome to another episode of the Prosperity Podcast, presented by Americans for Prosperity, the nation's largest grassroots advocate for free markets. You can subscribe to the Prosperity Podcast on iTunes and find all of our episodes on AmericansForProsperity.org. I am your host, Ed Dean. Welcome to another edition of Prosperity Podcast. I am your host, Ed Dean. How many of you out there have heard of the term democracy vouchers? It is used with taxpayer dollars for your income taxes statewide and also city taxes as far as your property taxes, used as a method of public financing for political campaigns. Coming up next, we are going to talk about this issue with Scott Blackburn, Senior Research Analyst at the Center for Competitive Politics. I'm Ed Dean, and this is another edition of Prosperity Podcast. Welcome to another edition of Prosperity Podcast. I'm your host, Ed Dean. Today we're talking with Scott Blackburn. He's a senior research analyst at the Center for Competitive Politics. Scott graduated from the University of Pennsylvania and has worked on Capitol Hill in the areas of the Cato Institute and the American Action Forum. His primary research areas include campaign contribution limits. Scott, let's talk about the issue of democracy vouchers. This is a new term that many of those that listen to the podcast have probably have never heard of them, that has to deal with political campaigns and public financing. Explain to the audience what this issue is about.
Sure. Democracy vouchers is Seattle's version of tax finance campaigns. Tax financing dates back a long time to the 70s, but all of the programs in some way boil down to giving tax dollars to politicians to run their campaigns in order that they don't have to raise the money themselves.
So on this issue, would under this program, voters are given vouchers, as you just said, paid with taxpayer dollars. Where did the conception come for this idea?
So the idea behind Seattle's program, which as you say, hands out to constituents in Seattle a voucher for $25, which they can then give to a candidate they like, is that we can somehow get a better democracy, get better politicians, get corruption out of office, if only candidates don't have to fundraise or get support from their constituents financially. And that idea, that sort of pie-in-the-sky notion, is at the heart of what Seattle is trying to do theoretically with their, or at least in name, what they're trying to do with their voucher program.
Your organization has been following this issue and the results of many campaign finance programs across the country. Of course, the most recent one can be tried was the democracy, as you pointed out, the voucher plan in Seattle. First, we've talked about this, as you said, and also about Seattle. What other areas are looking at this type of a program?
So we've seen approaches in a number of states for tax finance campaigns. Maine and Arizona have tax finance campaigns. New York City has a matching fund program where if you give a dollar, the state will give $6 of taxpayer money. Los Angeles and Connecticut have similar programs. So you see these crop up all over the place, usually in blue states, but often in red states as well. The goal, as I say, is in name to make democracy better so that fundraising doesn't have to occur, but the result is often just incumbency protection. Programs that are intended to produce results that are the same as the results of the past.
Let's talk
about the same people in office over and over again.
Scott, let's talk about those results. Recently, there was an election in Seattle. What was the result of the democracy vouchers?
You will be unsurprised to learn that almost all of the voucher funding went to incumbent candidates or well-connected candidates. Of the $315,000 that was doled out in the starter program, almost all of it went to three candidates. The first candidate was the city attorney. The second candidate was the head of a local union. And the third candidate was also a union director for the local AFL-CIO. And all of the candidates that won were well-funded, well-established candidates prior to the voucher program, and it did not produce any significant results.
This program is funded, for example, in the Democracy Voucher Program in Seattle, $3 million per year property tax on homes and businesses. I have to assume if they want to keep this funding around here, Scott, they're going to have to raise taxes more to fund this. Am I right or wrong?
If they expand the program, as they plan to do, I believe, they will have to raise property taxes. The money has to come from somewhere. There's currently a lawsuit challenging the particular funding mechanism of this program because it taxes property tax, and it's possible to own property in Seattle without being able to vote in Seattle. You're effectively taxing people who can't even have a say as to where the money goes or who gets the campaign funds, and that's a legal problem. But even if they overcome that, they'll just have to tax more somewhere else. That's the inevitable result of all of these tax financing programs is if you want politicians to receive public money, you have to take it from the public. And so the taxes inevitably come.
Scott, with your research, why do you think the democracy vouchers have failed to live up to their intended goals?
Well, I think with any campaign finance law, it's important to have at least a starting rule of thumb to see who the beneficiary is. And my rule is all laws are proposed either to benefit Democrats by Democrats, to benefit Republicans by Republicans, or to benefit incumbents by incumbents. Now, that's not always true, but at least when it comes to tax finance campaigns, I believe that politicians, at least some of them, don't like raising money. They like the idea that they can just tax people and take the money. And so that's the modus operandi for many of these tax finance programs. It's just better to take the money from someone else in order to run the campaign.
Scott, on many of these issues, whether it's right to work, tax increases, stadium funding, sometimes it really crosses party lines. There is no Democrat, Republican. You just have a lot of politicians that support it. When you talk about mm-hmm. this issue of democracy vouchers and, of course, being subsidized with your property taxes, who are the people that are for it, excluding yourself and other groups out there that are against it? Give us the pros of the people in support and some of the people that are fighting this, if there's any at all, besides you and your group.
Well, it's a difficult thing to fight. We are out there with a lot of local advocacy groups that are doing great work in the state, trying to fight back against some of these programs that tax consumers. The people that are for it are it's a classic bootlegger and Baptist situation. I think there are many groups that believe that democracy is fundamentally flawed, and that has something to do with the campaign donation process. They don't like it, and so they want these programs, if they see this as an answer. The research doesn't bear that out. There's no evidence that these actually make for better politicians, for better campaigns. But I think there are some true believers who think this is a spirit to the end. And the other group is obviously the incumbent politicians who see this as a way of keeping their job and keeping their campaign pocket lined.
Scott, has there been a pushback against these vouchers currently, and is there anything on the horizon in some of these cities or states to pass legislation to deal with this?
To try and stop these programs from happening?
Yeah, well, I mean, what's been the pushback to these vouchers coming off the failure in Seattle and other areas?
So I think that the failures of these programs are becoming known. I think that people, once they learn about the details of the program, are much less anxious to improve. The idea of improving democracy is great, but it's much less great if you have to pay for it with your tax dollars. If your property tax bill is suddenly 3% higher, 5% higher, if your income tax bill is higher. And so I think that people are starting to realize, particularly when it comes to tax finance campaigns, that this is not a solution. There's been at the federal level on the presidency, there's been a checkoff on your taxes for years where you can say, yes, I will give the president some of my tax dollars in order that he doesn't have to raise money for his campaign. Fewer and fewer people are checking that box because more and more people are starting to realize that these tax finance campaigns are just a waste of money. And I think advocacy groups across the country are starting to pick up on this. Free market groups, small government think tanks are starting to get the message that these programs just don't work.
Scott, how do the advocates and or the politicians, as you pointed out, it's not the most popular area when you talk about your income taxes going up in some of the states and your property taxes, but how do the advocates of democracy vouchers, how do they sell this to the public?
Well, I think there are a lot of scare tactics. So you will inevitably, politicians will get involved in some kind of scandal, often involving their campaigns or government favors, often having nothing to do whatsoever with what the program would actually do, what would actually be solved. But the scandal becomes a talking point for advocacy, for the importance of doing something. So in Oregon, for instance, the governor was involved in a scandal involving his wife. And I believe that sort of spilled over into Seattle, where people had the notion that this was bad government. We need to do something. We need to fix it. Why don't we try these tax finance campaigns?
Scott, name for the listening audience, other states or cities that at least that are on the radar that might be considering this type of public financing for the campaigns.
Sure. We're seeing a lot happening in cities. Washington, D.C. is currently considering a tax financing program. Maryland is currently considering some form of tax financing program. We've seen it in some localities in Maryland. They're considering expanding it. As I said, New York City has extensive tax financing. There are some who want to extend that to the state altogether. And Maine and Arizona are constantly attempting to garner more funds for what they already have in their tax finance programs. So it really is sort of across the country. We see efforts crop up from time to time to get this going.
Scott, finally, your organization, which is on the forefront of this issue of democracy vouchers, what would you say to someone who supported the public financing of campaigns? I mean, if they're listening to you right now or you're sitting at a forum, how do you present your case?
I would say look at the costs and look at the benefits. The costs are really easy to see. It costs millions of dollars of hard-earned tax dollars that could go to anything else in the state, whether it be schools, whether it be healthcare, and the benefits are just not there. What you see in the research time and time again is that incumbents get reelected at the same rate in places that have and don't have this. No more women are elected to the legislature. No more minorities are elected to the legislature. The same professions, business people, lawyers are the ones who are getting elected because really the same people are getting elected over and over again. And if you have a program designed to improve government that has the exact same people getting elected as the program that doesn't spend these tax dollars, it simply can't be a worthwhile program.
Today on Prosperity Podcast, we have been talking with Scott Blackburn, who is the Senior Research Analyst at the Center for Competitive Politics. Scott, keep us abreast on this issue and other municipalities that may be picking it up. It was good to talk to you today.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Prosperity Podcast. If you want to learn more about these issues and get involved in the fight for freedom, go to AmericansForProsperity.org. That's AmericansForProsperity.org. I have been your host, Ed Dean.